I think what we left off with last week, besides for a whole list of questions, but I think what we really did last week, the first week we spoke about whether or not this is a violate, whether or not conducting business on the internet is actually conducting business on Shabbos, right? And the second week we focused the first week on the whether or not it is a violation of doing business, because there is a disagreement amongst the Achronim, the later poskim, about if you set up a transaction that happens on Friday, you do the action of the transaction on Friday, but that it should actually take effect on Shabbos. And we spoke about whether or not that is a violation of the prohibition of doing business on Shabbos. Last week, what we spoke about is really what is the kinyan here, right? Whether or not there's even a kinyan. In order to violate doing business on Shabbos, there needs to be business being done on Shabbos. Now, if you're not thinking, you can't think about business or talk about business on Shabbos. So here you're not. You're sitting in shul. Right? You're not thinking about your website. Right? Let's assume. We're not thinking about our website. We're not thinking about it. So the only thing that's happening is somebody, let's say, is purchasing something from my website. So in that case, if is there really business being done at all? So that probably depends on whether or not there's a maisa kinyan. Is there actually a transaction, a halachic transaction, that is occurring when somebody purchases something from my website? So we spoke about that last week. We said some say yes and some say no. If it's no, right, if by writing in my, or if somebody, a non-Jew, were to write in their credit card and write buy, or, on my website, so that, the question is that actually, have they purchased anything yet? Halachically, did they make a transaction? So, some say yes, because we spoke last week, we mentioned that there are different kinyanim. In halacha, there are different ways to be kona an object. There are different ways to acquire something. So one way is a kinyan called a situmta, which means that whatever the normal way to make a transaction, to acquire something in the place that you live at that time, that is accepted as long as there's some action involved. So that's accepted as an action of a transaction. So like we spoke about, that in some places a handshake, and the Rishonim talk about a hanschlag, a handshake was an accepted maisa kinyan, because once we shook on it, there's no going back. So if that's the case, and if that's what putting in a credit card into the computer and clicking buy actually does, and that then possibly I now have ownership of something that they're holding, and that was an action of a transaction. Now it happens to be, so, and the other opinion was that no, there's no transaction going on. There's no transfer of funds. There's no real transaction happening here. All that's happening is a hischaivus, which means I, the owner of the website, who own all of these goods that somebody is purchasing from me on Shabbos, I am now obligated to get them to you. I owe you that object, but you didn't actually acquire the object yet, right? If the situmta is an actual transaction, then it would be your object already. But here, I still own the object. I, the owner of the business, still own the object. I just owe you one of the whatever I'm selling. I'm selling computers. I owe you a computer. But there's no computer in my warehouse that's yours. Right? There's no transaction that was done. I owe it to you, but there's no transaction that was done. So because we were talking about that, so a few other questions came up that I just wanted to kind of tie the loose ends. So we spoke about a check, right? What is a check? So in order to acquire metaltalim, which means non-land, not karka, not a house, metaltalim, objects that are movable objects, right? Objects, any goods. So in order to acquire goods, there is a question, how can you acquire goods? In what methods of kinyan can you acquire goods? So I think I mentioned last week that a shtar, you cannot acquire goods with a shtar, by writing a shtar. You can't, by writing a contract, that's not a way of acquiring goods. A shtar works for kiddushin. You can acquire a woman with a shtar. You can acquire a house with a shtar, but you can't acquire goods. You can't buy a computer with a shtar by writing a contract and agreeing, you know, we agree to, you know, here's your shtar mechira that I bought it from you. That's not a way of actually acquiring anything. That, you can't acquire goods through a shtar. Kesef, another way of acquisition is money. right? I give you money, and you get the money, and now I own the object that you're selling me. The problem is that there's machlokas in the Gemara about whether kesef is kone or not. Is it kone metalkalim or not? Again, can it be kone goods? Right? Can it be kone a computer? Am I acquiring the computer if I give you $100 or not? Or do I not own the computer yet, even though I gave you the $100? So we paskin like the opinion that holds that it is kone, but it's kone only on a deraisa level, right? Meaning, according to the Torah, kesef is kone, that money can acquire goods for you. However, mizrabanan, the rabbis came along and said that we're worried that if when I give you money, that is a full transaction, that I give you $100 and now I own the computer in your warehouse. The problem is that if that's the case, that I now own a computer in your warehouse, you could say to me, well, sorry, you know, there's a fire in my warehouse and your computer is the one that got destroyed, right? And I would have, I, the owner of the warehouse, and now the owner of your $100, I have no reason to risk my life to put out the fire in my warehouse if it's your goods that are burning. I don't really care. I got my money already, so I'm going to put my life on the line to save your goods? Not likely. So the rabbi said, well, so we're worried that if you give me money, and if you, when you give me money, you're acquiring, I acquire your money, and you acquire the computer that I have in the warehouse, so we're worried that I might say, nistrafu chitecha ba'aliyah, right? That we're worried I might say, your wheat was burned in the storehouse, right? That's what they sold then, wheat. So your wheat was the one that was burned in the warehouse, and I didn't save it for you. But tough luck, that was yours, and your $100 remains mine. So therefore the rabbi said that kesef is not kone metalkalim either. Money, by giving money, that's also not a form of transaction that can acquire goods, movable goods. So how do you acquire goods? Right? What makes your chair? What makes your computer? How does it go from the ownership of the seller to your ownership, the owner, now, after you pay for it? If you're by giving the money, that's not enough. So the answer is that there are different ways. For example, by picking it up, hagbah, by possession, hagbah, meshicha, by pulling something or by pushing something, or hagbah, or by picking something up, putting it in your hand. We spoke about in your chater, once you put it into your courtyard can be kone for you. So all of those are ways that you can be kone metalfon. Those are ways of acquiring goods, movable objects. But kesef is not a way to acquire goods. Kesef, midrabanan, cannot acquire goods. So the question is, what about a check? Right, what's a check? Right, and I didn't get a chance to find this. I tried to find this quickly, but I didn't get a chance to find this, and I'm sure there are tshuvas written about it, what exactly a check is in halacha, but I'm not sure. A few of the people that I spoke to were not 100% sure about it, because, you know, what is a check? Is a check considered like money? When I give you a check, have I given you money? Or have I given you a shtar? Did I give you a contract? Is it an IOU? Right? So I'm not really sure. It's not really clear. I have to check. I have to find it. I'm sure there are tshuvas written about it.
It sounds like it's money via shliach, no?
It's money via shliach.
Yeah. Is the regular check and a certified check?
I have no idea. I don't know what the practical difference is between them.
Practical difference.
One is cash, one is not. If you get a bank check, it's yours. You go to the bank, the cash is, it's bank back.
As opposed to
a personal check.
Which is backed by your bank account.
A certified check, the bank says, yes, there's money to cover this in the account.
Uh-huh. Regular check, there's
regular
no guarantee.
You want a regular check, mm-hmm.
It's going to
happen.
So a certified check is like a credit card?
No, it's like cash.
Cash.
It's like cash, except for that they need to still go to the bank and get the cash.
But the bank is guaranteed that...
But a credit card runs the check to make sure that you have your money. Well, let's say...
credit card could be...
Not a credit card. Let's say a debit card. Mm-hmm. A debit card runs a check to make sure there's money in your your account to make sure. So a certified check is like using a debit card.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But a debit card, I'm not sure a debit card would be considered cash.
It's a little different. Debit card, I'm getting my money immediately, right? Transferred into my accounts.
Immediately,
The check is like totally something that's worth $100, but it's not the $100 yet. I still have to do some action to go.
It's shove a kesef. It's like worth $100.
Right.
So is it really worth $100, or just because it says that the bank will pay $100?
Well, is a $100 bill worth $100? It says it's worth $100. The piece of paper is not worth $100.
Well, hold on. If I give you a certified check,
yeah,
and then you take that certified check and try to buy pizza with it.
Most places would not take it. There are certain places, like if you have like American Express traveler's checks, they might take it.
Mm. But, mm-hmm. Right, but not everybody would take it, because it's not really cash. Right, it's still made out to somebody. It means somebody owes you, I guarantee you there's money there, and I guarantee you it's coming, but somebody owes you this money, and you'll get your money. It's there, the bank said it's there, but it's not quite money. Regardless, I mean, it might not matter, because neither a shtar nor kesef can acquire goods.
I guess we're just going back a little bit about the fire in the warehouse and
yeah.
the responsibility. You say that you can buy something once you take it into your possession, then it's yours. Does the law of the land impact it at all? Because the law here would be, if I bought the computer from you and you got to deliver me the computer, whether I take the computer or not, if you can't deliver me that computer because it caught fire,
yeah.
you either have to give me the money back
right.
or give me the computer.
Right.
So, for all intents and purposes, I do own that computer. So is that Jewish law or is that law of the land?
Right, so that's important for the law of the land. However, the difference is that they cannot, will not, or don't point to a computer in their warehouse and say, this one's for you. Right?
No, I don't think meaning, computer
right, exactly. Meaning, the difference is that when we buy something from a big company and they have a warehouse full of
mm-hmm.
objects, of goods, so we're not actually acquiring a specific object or good. That's, right, according to, especially, this works well for the opinion that says that's not a real transaction. There's no transfer of ownership here. All that's happening is a hischaivus. The company now owes me a computer. Right? They have to send me the computer, and that would make a lot of sense, right? That there's no computer in the warehouse when I say click buy, that now it says your name on it.
Mm-hmm.
No, I owe you a computer. I need to deliver you a computer. If I can't deliver you any computer, then it's subject to the fine print. And if I can't deliver you the computer, then I have to give you your money back. But the point is that there's not actually a transfer of ownership there. They're not giving you anything. Right? There's nothing that's going to you yet. They owe you a computer, but did you do business? Was there a transfer of ownership?
Yeah, you did business if the delivery happened on Shabbos.
You did business, which is why maybe you shouldn't take a package on Shabbos.
Not take. What if you're the company that's delivering it? You're not UPS, but you sent it out, and the transaction that happened with your company is being completed. The kinyan is happening on Shabbos.
On Shabbos. Right. So that's also a big question. When you send it through a delivery service, right?
Because there's a chance that the person's not home and doesn't accept the package.
It's
that's
in their
true.
Chutzer. There's a chance that it's left.
It's in their chutzer, that's true.
But if it's left there,
if they want to be coming through the chutzer.
It's
true. But that's true. Let's say it's an
non-Jew. Front doorstep, it's UPS responsibility to make sure.
Let's say it's a non-Jew.
You can follow.
Let's say it's a non-Jew, and they'll take it.
Yeah,
right? You're right. So the question is, when the company delivers something for me, at what point is it out of, when UPS delivers something for me, my company. So at what point am I out of the transaction? At what point am I out of the picture? I'm the seller. Am I out of the picture once UPS takes it? Is UPS my shliach? Right? Are they my messenger? The problem with that is...
Well, what happens if they're paying for shipping?
Yeah.
Let's say the buyer is paying for shipping. So you're paying for you. You know.
So maybe UPS...
They want it overnight. They're paying for it. You know, they're making the deal as to when they want that package.
Right.
They have the option to choose whether or not they want it delivered on Saturday, overnight, or they want it.
I don't know.
Sometimes. I don't know if you can be that specific always.
Yeah. I mean, if it's insured, that means it's UPS's now, basically. It's UPS's computer, and they're responsible to do the business with.
So they're responsible for it. So did they take ownership in the middle?
I think so.
Right, maybe. It's hard to say that they would be my shliach, they would be my messenger, because halachically. We say ein shlichus la'akum, that you can't appoint a non-Jew to be your halachic messenger, right? That they can't be a messenger for you. So if UPS is, I assume, a non-Jewish company, or I hope the person delivering on Shabbos is a non-Jewish delivery man. So if he can't be my messenger, I the seller. So at what point? So it's not clear. I don't have a good answer. I'm just raising the question, at what point am I, like Binyamin's case, where you're making a transaction with a computer, right? Like the gas station. You're making a transaction with a computer, not with the owner of the company. I'm not sure yet that I would go that far, but you can say to me, well, why is that different than this case, where you're telling me that when UPS is delivering an object for me, the seller, to you, the buyer, so if we're talking about UPS actually having ownership in the middle, right? I can sell something to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew can then give it to you, sell it to you, but he can't be acting as my messenger. So it's not clear where the transfer of ownership happens, where all of the different stages of ownership happen, right? It's not so clear. It's not to me. It's not so clear. When does UPS take ownership? When does the seller? When is the seller, let's say the Jewish seller, no longer involved in the transaction? That is out of my hands. Maybe once he delivers it to the UPS, because now UPS is responsible for any lost objects. In which case, maybe the UPS is basically saying, "I now own this," right? If UPS, I don't know what would happen if UPS doesn't.
No, UPS doesn't own it. UPS is essentially the bailor, the person in care, custody, control of the buyer's goods. They are mm-hmm. holding and controlling the buyer's goods.
You think it's the buyer's already?
Once UPS picks it up, the buyer's now holding it through their messenger, their...
Right. The question is, halachically, when is the buyer making... Right, no, I understand. I'm saying,
The buyer pays for the item when that item is being picked up by UPS.
Yeah, but we don't care. Halachically, paying for an item is meaningless.
It's not
for movable objects.
And
what
if B&H closed down?
We'll get to that. We'll get to it. There are other issues. This is one issue. I have five issues here. We've only gotten through one and two. We got through two because we spoke about Zilus of the Shabbos. That's not Shabbos Dick, right? To have your website open. So we spoke about that the first week. And we spoke about business on Shabbos. And all of this is really part of the discussion of doing business on Shabbos. And the question is there a transaction that's taking place when placing the order or accepting the order or filling the order on Shabbos? Is that really a transaction? If it's not a transaction, there's no doing business. Right? There's no business there. If it is a transaction, we have something to talk about. It's still not clear it's a violation because even if it is a transaction, it still might not be a problem of doing business on Shabbos because when you are a passive party, like we spoke about the first week, when you are a passive party to the action, the transaction happening, whether it's because you did the action of the transaction on Friday and it's just supposed to take effect on Shabbos, or in this case, where the transaction is occurring on Shabbos, if you're passive, so you may not be in violation of the Isser Dirabana, the rabbinic Isser of doing business on Shabbos, right? So it's very unclear. So just to touch on a few things that we did speak about last week, we're left with questions about having deposits into your bank account on Shabbos or direct deposit on Shabbos, whether in or out. So I thought about it a little bit. I think the reason why it's fine and you don't have to change your monthly schedule of when your checks go out or when your checks come in is probably because we know that there is no obligation for a person to make sure that his utensils and his objects don't do work on Shabbos, right? There is no chiyuv of shvisas kelim, right? Like we spoke about, the sprinkler. So if a person has a sprinkler on a certain schedule, so sometimes the sprinkler goes on Shabbos, assuming that there's no marasayan involved, right? Meaning that everybody knows that sprinklers are on schedules and that you're not turning on the sprinkler every time it goes on. So the in-ground sprinklers more
but
than the...
Most in-ground sprinklers have a pin, like mine I have going on every odd day, like my address, but I have a pin that it won't go on Saturday, whether it's an odd day or not. So you can
stop it.
I can stop it from going on Saturday.
Uh-huh. Question is, do you have to?
I don't know, but I
right.
did that because I didn't want people to say, oh, he's
okay,
sprinkling on
right. Saturday. So it might not look good. Right. It may be a problem of marasayan because people might walk by and say, how could you do the sprinkler on Shabbos? But let's say everybody knows that it's not a problem of marasayan. Let's say everybody knows that everybody has it on schedule and it's no problem. I'm not sure. Marasayan is also very unclear, and we'll talk about marasayan soon. But marasayan is also very unclear. Where is it marasayan? When can we assume people know that if I'm doing this, I'm doing it for a specific reason, that I'm not involved? Not so clear. But let's say, or you know what, let's not talk about sprinklers because it's not clear. Let's talk about the case of the Gemara. The Gemara talks about the case of the Gemara talks about watering the lawn on Shabbos. That's the case of the Gemara, of setting it up that the water should, that the lawn should be watered on Shabbos. So the Gemara says that that's okay because that's your object, your utensils, your kelim, working on Shabbos. You could set something up to happen, as long as you're setting it up on Erev Shabbos, you can set it up to happen on Shabbos. And as long as there's no other violation, like Zelus of the Shabbos, not being Shabbosic, like the grinding of the mill, which we spoke about, the noise of the grinding of the mill, the problem was Zelus of the Shabbos. But otherwise, you would have been allowed to grind the mill, set the mill to be set up on Friday afternoon to work on Shabbos. And had it not been for the noise that destroys the Shabbos atmosphere, it would have been okay to have that done on Shabbos. So, yes, except for that there are other issues with cooking, right? There would be no problem. You could have your oven go on and off on Shabbos as many times as you want. The problem is that you can't cook on Shabbos.
But you're not cooking. Who's you're cooking? Saying the kelim are cooking.
But you can't put the food in there. So you leave the food in there from Friday afternoon.
Just like I'm not watering corn. There's a problem with watering grass on Shabbos.
So you're putting your food in there on Friday afternoon.
Right. That's just a theoretical.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
Or a crock pot or whatever.
Okay, yeah. Let's say a hot plate.
But you're not allowed to eat food that was cooked on Shabbos, right?
Well, not if it wasn't cooked. The Isser. No. Only if it was there is an Isser done. Yeah, so that's a big question about dishwashers. Can you have your dishwasher go on Shabbos? If it's a quiet dishwasher, if the motion sensor, the sensor is off, that when I open it, it still goes on, right? All these questions. The reason why they're questions is because there is no prohibition for your kalim to be doing Shabbos violations if you're not doing anything, right? If you set something to go on, so your lights go on Shabbos, so isn't that a violation of Shabbos? But you can't turn it on, but I can set it. Right? Even Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was very machmir and delusive to Shabbos, even he agreed that you can set your lights on Shabbos. So you see that there's nothing wrong with having your objects in your house do malacha on Shabbos. Your lights can go on and off on Shabbos. You can't turn them on and off, right? But if they're set from before Shabbos, so that's okay. So I think that the deposits into banks and going out of your bank account, especially because these aren't business transactions, right? That's not really business. Plus the fact that we said that they're not really transactions, right? Banks don't really transfer funds on Shabbos. So it's hard to say that those would be problematic. I would think that those are closer to setting a light to go on, right? It's even better than setting a light to go on Shabbos, because setting a light to go on Shabbos, you're specifically setting it to go on Shabbos. Here, you set it on January 1st, that every first of the month, the money should go out of your bank account. You didn't think about Shabbos. You weren't setting it that you should go out of your bank account on Shabbos every month. It happens to be once a year, the first of the month comes out on Shabbos. So on that month, it goes out on Shabbos, but it's not even clear that anything's happening. And even if it was happening, it's like your kelim working for you. It's like your light's going on, which you didn't even set up specifically to go on Shabbos. So, I don't know. Just to me, it seems like, again, I didn't see this anywhere, but it just seems like there are enough variables there that, you know, you can just leave everything as it is and let it continue. And it would not be a violation of all these different issues. And then just tying up the last loose end from last week, the question was, if you purchase something on the internet, so you need to then make a kinyan when it gets to your house, meaning when it gets to my house, I buy the computer on the internet, when it comes to my house, do I have to do the action of the transaction? Do I have to do the maisa kinyan? Right? Do I have to pick it up? Is my picking it up the transaction that's making this computer now mine? So the answer is that if you're buying something with money, so we said that money is not will not cause a real transfer of ownership. It's not a good transaction for goods, movable objects. So yes, if I pay somebody $100 and then he delivers the computer to my house, when I pick the computer up, that's when there's a transfer of ownership. Not when I gave him the money, but when I'm doing the picking up or the pulling of the computer or the putting of the computer into my chatzer, and my intentions are that my chatzer, my koyar, should purchase it for me. So yes, even if you're purchasing something and it's being delivered to your house, the actual kinyan, the purchase, may not be until it gets to your house and you pick it up or do some act of ownership. Sorry?
The chatzer Chatzah
can be Kenyan. Chatzah can be, as long as you want it to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it, you would infer from that it would be a problem to bring in packages on Shabbos.
Could, right. According to that, it might be, yeah.
What about even something like the newspaper? How do I make a Kenyan on the newspaper on Shabbos?
How do you make a Kenyan on the newspaper on Shabbos?
It's like a newspaper. It's all problem with Nola.
Yeah. That's the machlokas, whether it's a problem with Nola on a newspaper, whether it's a problem or not. That's the machlokas. I forgot who. But it's the machlokas. It's not so clear that it's Nola on Shabbos. But it might be. But how do you make a Kenyan on the newspaper? Or are you allowed, you're saying, are you allowed to pick it up and bring it inside?
The number of people in Tavadu is very high.
Right. The question is, so
everywhere,
why? Some of it's okay. The question is, why?
Even in Brooklyn, they bring in the newspaper. Packages they leave in the newspaper.
But he's not specifically coming to your house. He's coming to your area regardless of whether you get the paper or not.
Right. No,
no,
right.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about
it's not about him doing...
Yeah.
I paid money at some point for X
yeah.
amount of weeks of delivery,
right.
which comes out to X amount of newspapers. So I specifically really paid for this newspaper to be delivered. And I'm picking it up. I'm finishing the Kenyan.
Yeah, it's different in the mail because the mail you just put outside. You don't do anything. But the newspaper, you unwrap it and you open it up and you read it.
Right.
And I didn't pay for the mail. I'm talking about something that I paid
well,
for.
Well,
it's delivery.
Paid for it.
Oh, but, yeah.
Right. But the mail, you don't care.
Abstract.
I don't know. Okay, I don't know. That's a good question. See, with some, it's okay because everybody does it. So usually when a lot of people do something, it's usually okay. The question is just why. So, and there is a question about reading newspapers on Shabbos, whether that's the best thing to be doing on Shabbos with your time, but that's not what we're talking about tonight. But I don't know. I'm not sure. But again, if so many people do it, you assume it's okay. The question is just why? How do you get around it? It's hard to say that you would have kavana not to be kona.
Right?
I'm picking it up with kavana not to be kona. I don't want this newspaper. I'm bringing it to my house to read it. I don't want
to
own this newspaper. It's not mine. It's still the time.
Maybe you make an argument that it's not that I'm really paying for a subscription. It's for over a long time period. I'm not thinking about each individual one.
That's true.
You can just get the paper. Just
you can get the paper.
I can, and maybe that's more of a problem.
No, that's a Schar Shabbos issue, which we'll talk about now. Kinyanim issue. I don't know.
Can you just say that I'm paying double the price for if there's a Friday's newspaper and they want to give me a free newspaper on Shabbat?
Yeah. You could say that. You could say that, but if you say that, still, when I take the paper, even if they're giving it to me for free, right? Binyamin's saying I'm still making a kinyan on Shabbos. I'm still taking ownership of this newspaper on Shabbos if I pick it up from my driveway, right? Even if they give it to me for free, it's a matana, so you can't give a gift on Shabbos. Unless it's going to be used for Shabbos. You're saying maybe this is used for Shabbos. That's only if it's a matana.
It is a matana.
Oh, you're saying if it's not a matana, then you can't...
I don't know. Let's... Good question.
Let's sit on it. The only issue is that if for some reason they didn't deliver the paper, you can't go after them and saying, I want my money back.
You would, after Shabbos. You
can't.
Well, he's saying if it's a gift.
Oh, it's a good
thing. And you should ask them for two on Thursday.
Well, our time limit, my paper doesn't come on a certain day, it's two papers the next day. So.
Same one?
No.
Yes.
That's
right. Yes. If you don't get delivery one day because
so you get two.
Guy fell asleep,
yeah.
Then you will get both days' paper the following
day. Both days. Okay, both days. So not two of the same day.
You got a crummy delivery.
Sometimes guys snow or something.
All right.
Not
I don't
on
know.
Wall Street.
Every day.
Okay.
Times, Wall Street Journal, Newsday.
Okay. A lot of Kenyan.
Okay. I don't know. We'll have to figure out newspapers on Shabbos.
Oh, yeah.
Again, newspapers on Shabbos. There's a lot of halakha controversy about reading newspapers on Shabbos. But the question is about making the Kenyan on the newspapers. How do you get around that? I don't know. We'll have to figure that out. Okay. So there are a few other issues. So okay, good. So we said let's assume that it's not a problem of they lose for the Shabbos because, I don't know, there's a good chance nobody's looking at it on Shabbos. Unless it's, but that's a question, and that is a very gray area, whether it was this falls under this category of not being Shabbistic to have your website open on Shabbos. And let's assume, though, that it's not a problem of doing business on Shabbos, either because doing business passively is not a problem, making a transaction in a passive way is not a problem, or because there's not even a transaction, transfer of ownership going on here. So fine. There's still three other issues that we have to deal with. One of them is Schar Shabbos that we mentioned. Schar Shabbos means you can't make money on Shabbos. Right? You can't be paid. You can't get paid for something that you do on Shabbos. The Gemara says that it's Aser. But the Gemara says that if you're paid for a month or a week, and it happens to be included in that is also Shabbos, so then it's okay. So if you're working for a whole month, right, and included in your pay for the, you're being paid for the whole month, and it happens to be you have to work on Shabbos, so that's not a violation of Schar Shabbos. That's not a problem of getting paid for work you're doing on Shabbos, because it's behavla, as we've mentioned. It's kind of swallowed up and you know, brushed under and into the rest of the time that you are allowed to accept reward and payment for your work, and therefore it's mutter. The Noda B'Yehuda, who is one of the Achronim, and he has a lot of tshuvas from Yechezkel, and I think, so he says that, he quotes a case that, can you go to a mikveh, can you pay for a mikveh that you went to on Shabbos? And let's say a woman has to go to the mikveh Friday night, she can't pay on Shabbos, so she comes back on Motzei Shabbos to pay for the mikveh. The problem is, how could she pay for something that she did on Shabbos? Or how could the mikveh accept the payment for it of something that they did on Shabbos? So the Noda B'Yehuda writes that it's mutter because what the woman is paying for there is not the use of the mikvah on Shabbos. What she's paying for is the wood that was burned to heat the mikvah on Shabbos. And if you're paying for an object, right, not a service, but an object, so then there's no problem of Schar Shabbos. It happens to be that she would have only paid $5 for the wood, and you charged her 10, well, behavla. We say, well, since it will swallow up the part, the $5, which is for the service of using the mikvah on Shabbos, and we'll push that together with, and it'll be clumped together with the $5 for the wood, and since the being paid for the wood that I had to burn to heat this mikvah on Shabbos is not a problem of accepting payment for something I did on Shabbos, so too, the other $5 is kind of grouped together with that. So the Noda B'Yehuda explains that the only time there's a violation of accepting payment for on Shabbos, for work you did on Shabbos, is for work, is for service, an action, a service that you gave on Shabbos, that you provided on Shabbos. But if you're selling an object, so there's no Schar Shabbos. If my website is selling objects, and the objects are all bought on Shabbos, so there's no problem of me accepting the money and using the money and getting benefit from the money because of Schar Shabbos. It's not Schar Shabbos. Schar Shabbos means that I'm being paid for work that I did on Shabbos, for services that I gave on Shabbos. But if I'm selling objects, and it happens to be that they're sold on Shabbos, so there's no violation, and that money that I'm gaining is not money that was made from Schar Shabbos. Not a problem with Schar Shabbos money. No, an aliyah is different. But let's say, for example, let's say you have a vending machine. Right? This is where it comes up, in the vending machines. And a number of tshuvas are written about vending machines. So the reason why a vending machine is not a problem of my making money on Shabbos, if I own a vending machine and somebody buys from me on Shabbos, is because they're paying for the object that they're buying. They're not paying for the service that I'm doing for them, and if they are paying for a service, it's a little bit, and it'll be behavla, it'll be grouped together and swallowed up in the money that they're paying for the object that they're getting. So when they're buying an object on Shabbos, we assume that that's what they're paying for, and we say all of the money is for the object, and whatever is not, is we say is havla, it's swallowed up with the money for the service is being swallowed up for the money that you're paying for the object, and therefore it's not a problem with Schar Shabbos. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach takes it one step further. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who lived until the end of the 20th century in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, so Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach took it one step further and said that even maintenance, if there was maintenance or preparation that needed to be done during the week for services that were provided on Shabbos, even that's mutter. Meaning, even that's not schar Shabbos. For example, let's say you go to a hotel for Shabbos, right? So how could the hotel, who's, let's say, a Jewish hotel, how could they accept payment for the services that they gave you on Shabbos? They let you stay in their rooms on Shabbos. How could they accept payment for that? That's schar Shabbos. They're being paid for services they provided on Shabbos. So how could they accept payment for that? How could they make money for that? Shlomo Zalman Orbach says that the reason why they're allowed to is because they needed to, there was maintenance that needed to be done, there were preparations that needed to be done during the week. And since all of that needed to be done during the week, that allows them to accept the money that you're paying for the services on Shabbos because of Havlah. Meaning it all gets mixed up together. It all gets swallowed up together. So it's as if you're paying, since there is something that you're paying for that was not done on Shabbos, in this case, you're paying for the rooms to be prepared for you on Friday. You're paying for the fact for them to make sure that everything works during the week to make sure it works for Shabbos. Since there are things that they need to pay for during the week, therefore, part of what you're paying for, when you pay for, I'm paying for the room, you're not only paying for the room, you're paying for all the preparation and all of the maintenance that they needed to provide before Shabbos to make sure that the services that you wanted on Shabbos were available to you. And therefore, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says, that's enough to say, now you can accept your payment for the services on Shabbos, because the services on Shabbos, the payment for the services on Shabbos is now swallowed up with the rest of the services that you're charging for.
And are we assuming that the services that are being performed on Shabbos are all, that none of the services being performed on Shabbos are usher, that they're all allowed what they're doing?
Yeah.
Like making a bed or, I don't know, they're doing something on Shabbos, they're still working a front desk, they're answering phones. I mean, how are you going to, these are all, I mean, answering phones, typing reservations to the computer, they're doing a lot of things on Shabbos that are usher.
Yeah, but those aren't,
but they're not Jewish. They're not Jewish.
Oh, they're not Jewish.
The people taking the people at the front desk, let's assume, are not Jewish. The owners of the hotel are Jewish.
Okay.
So, but that's the same question of like a website, meaning they're doing work for me. I own the hotel. They're doing work for me on Shabbos. Right? But are they really? Are they accepting a reservation? So are they really doing work on, right?
Okay.
But yeah, it's a good question. Can a Jew own a hotel that
actually
takes reservations on Shabbos? Maybe
but
not.
They
shut down on Shabbos. The front desk is shut down on Shabbos.
Right.
That would make
right.
sense, because otherwise, you know, your business is open on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said, you can't have your business open on Shabbos.
Yeah. So, on the shoes on the vending machines, how do you
okay. So, the vending machines. So, the vending machines, there are five conditions that the Maharshag, who we said was Shlomo Greenfield, who lived in the end of the 19th, beginning of 20th century in Hungary, so he has a tshuva about the vending machines, and he said there are five conditions that need to be met in order for you to be allowed to use a vending machine, for you who own the vending machine to allow it to remain in use on Shabbos. He said the five conditions are that it should be in Rishus HaRabim. I think actually he may only quote three, and then somebody else added the last two. That it should be in Rishus HaRabim, meaning it shouldn't be in your house, it shouldn't be in a private place, it should be out wherever, so that somebody, whoever wants to use it, can use it. It should be Ein Shmo Olav. I mean, it shouldn't have your name on it. They shouldn't know it's yours. Right? It should be a vending machine. Nobody knows who owns it. They don't know that you, the Jew, owns it. Number three is they don't know who it belongs to, right? Which is a little bit different. Right? It's not just Ein Shmo Olav that would be obvious, but they shouldn't even know that it belongs to you. Oh, so that's the problem. What if it's the name of a company? Right? They also talk about this, like we spoke about the bankomat. The ATM machines in Israel, there's a whole discussion about can they have the ATM machines open on Shabbos. So they quoted this tshuva, and they said the problem is that it says Mizrahi Bank on it, right? So there's no getting around Shmo Olav. His name is on it. So how could you get around it? So that's a potential issue. The reason why it's a problem to have your name on it is because of Marasayan, meaning it looks like you're doing work on Shabbos. The problem with that is that everybody knows that there's not somebody sitting on the other side of the ATM machine putting the money in while you're asking it to come out, right? So it's not clear that there's Maris Ayin by all of these things, right? We'll get back to Meir Sinai in a minute. But just to finish this thought, the other two are that you should make a condition, think to yourself, that anything, any money that somebody puts into my vending machine on Shabbos, so they'll get their candy that they're ordering and paying for, but I'm not going to be kona their money until after Shabbos. Right? So however I'm being kona their money, but I'm putting it into my machine, I don't want it to be kona until after Shabbos. And the fifth thing is, which is a little bit tricky, is that you have to say before Shabbos that whoever comes to buy something, whatever they're going to buy tomorrow on Shabbos, it's already theirs. Right? That now I'm making a condition that whatever they buy tomorrow, it's already theirs.
You have to say that every week?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, I guess if you say it once, I don't know. The question is whether that works. It's called brera, that you're retroactively or in the future choosing something. Here, it's not exactly, it's a little tricky.
Going back to hotels for a second, I know that I work in a nursing home. Every other year, we sit down with me and my coworker, we sit down with the owner to sell. Any that comes from Shabbos belongs to the guy.
Right.
So they have any specialization. They open, but they don't own it.
Right. So that's a whole separate topic of having a partnership with a guy, that they would be able to own it on Shabbos. They have shtaros that they sell their company. People sell their companies to goyim on Shabbos, only on Shabbos. Not everybody likes it. Not everybody is convinced that it's valid. It's similar to like a trickery, but it does exist. And there are some who say this is the way to get around it. Meaning, you know, so not. It's not that nobody likes it, but there are some who don't like it. I know they say Rav Soloveitchik didn't like it. He thought that it was...
Why? Because it's not chametz.
That's a good question.
Seems like a real game, too, you know?
That's a good question. Why can we sell chametz? That's a good question. But there are some people who don't like selling chametz either. They say Rav Soloveitchik used to not sell chametz gomor. Like, if he had a loaf of bread in his freezer, he wouldn't sell it. He'd get rid of it. But it's a good question, because it's also a little bit of a harama, a trickery, a loophole, almost. Is it the same? I don't know. So but again, some people say, what's wrong with it? You're playing by all the rules. I'm selling, we have a contract that says, I sell you this business on Shabbos, it's yours. All of the benefits that we get, all of the money that we make is yours. But others think that it's like playing games. Not everybody thinks it's like playing games, and you know, everybody who the situation comes up should ask their local Orthodox rabbi. But it's a question.
Yeah, it's like a restaurant kosher that day.
A restaurant? What do you mean?
A restaurant, and there's no or a nursing home, for example.
Yeah.
And then the guy owns it for a day. That means you have a problem with cooking and canceling from a
distance. It could be. That's a good question. If you own a restaurant, if you own a kosher restaurant.
Kosher franchise or something like a Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a very good question. If you have a Dunkin' Donuts that's owned by a Jew, a kosher Dunkin' Donuts, I mean, it doesn't have to be owned by a Jew. But let's say it is owned by a Jew, and you sell it to a non-Jew on Shabbos, that they should own it on Shabbos. So do you have to tovel all the kalim again every Sunday morning? Very kashering with Caleb.
Well, the kashering agency still comes in shop, even without driving.
Yeah, I mean, Yosef and Nichnas, you know, they come in and out, so they. But yeah, that's a good question, whether they have to. The minhag is not to. I don't think any Dunkin' Donuts tovels all their Caleb again after Shabbos, every time they buy it back. But it's a question as to why exactly, why not. Doesn't look like it, right? Doesn't look like we're going to finish now. Alright, so we'll finish next week in Mirtz Hashem. Alright, we'll stop here. But when Mirtz Hashem, we'll actually try to finish next week.